Morning, and thank you for joining us. Before we get started, just a quick couple housekeeping items. If you have a question during our session, please raise your hand within the Zoom platform or send us a chat. We'll be monitoring so we can see your messages and questions there. If you are in the media center at the Daytona International Speedway, please raise your hand within the Zoom platform. We will call on you and then utilize the microphone in their room to ask your question. If you have any additional questions or just need our assistance, I'm going to put my cell phone in the chat so you may text me as well. So to get started this morning with our first media availability today on the Daytona 500 is two pilots from the Thunderbirds who are joining us before they take the big flight during pre-race ceremonies. And we have with us Lieutenant Colonel John Caldwell, who flies the Thunderbird 1. He's the commander and leader. He flies the first jet. And then also Major Zane Taylor, who's Thunderbird 3. He's a right-wing pilot. And they're both from Orlando, Florida, so very familiar with the Daytona festivities. And John, this is your third Daytona 500. So just tell us a little about, John, if you don't mind to start for us, tell us a little bit about what it's like to, you know, come to the Daytona 500 and be a part of those festivities. And then also, if you don't mind to reflect on last year, what it was like in 2020 before the pandemic hit. And then you or Zane, tell us a little bit about what 2020 looked like for your team and how that really changed what you guys kind of did and how you adapted to that.
Sure. So Daytona 500 has always been a big part of my upbringing. Being in Orlando, we always knew when the race was going on. There's always a lot of energy around this event, America's Great Race. You know, it's been going on since the 50s. And to be quite honest with you, the team has a unique relationship with the Daytona community. So early in the 1955, in fact, 54 and 55, the team came out here and performed air shows before and after the Daytona 500. Now, this, of course, was when they raced on the beach, down by the inlet in North Turn and all that. So the team has a long history of participating here. And then recently, within the past decade, we started making it a tradition again for us to show up and execute the flyover portion for the past 11 years. So for me, the event is very special because it's a combination of two things in my life. One, my profession and being a Thunderbird. And then two, being a kid growing up in Orlando and going to Daytona, being excited about it, wearing the shirts, coming to the beach. So this area is very much a part of my upbringing. This event's very much part of my upbringing, and it's just really special to combine that with what I do now. So it's very unique for sure. I will reflect on last year. So this is my third time flying a Daytona 500. So I make the claim that I own 30% equity in the Daytona 500 flyovers for Thunderbirds. that's a unique claim I like to make. But last year it was interesting. It was special because it was the first time that we flew the Daytona 500 with the president being here, which was a unique experience. It was great to execute the flyover. And then we had some interaction time with the president, with Air Force One, and it added a little extra flair to the event. If you recall, last year, we did something in addition to just a normal flyover. We added the Delta burst at the end while the president made the command to start the engines. And I think that was a unique chapter that we started in this flyover in Daytona 500. So last year was very special. It was also special in the sense that was probably our last normal event of 2020. So it stands out in my mind. It is seared in my brain as kind of the end of normalcy as we entered into 2020, the pandemic, which, as we all know, was a challenging time for everyone, but particularly for this team who makes a living on public gatherings, traveling on the road, which is what gave birth to the America Strong effort, flying around the nation, saluting the healthcare workers, over 13 major cities and 248 hospitals. So it all started here at Daytona. This was kind of our departure from the normal track. So we look back at this event last year as one of the things that we were able to do and keep the tradition alive despite the pandemic.
All right, and do you mind to share with us, I know throughout the kind of the pandemic and you would make special flyovers at hospitals and facilities that were helping us fight the pandemic. And Do you mind to share with us maybe one of those experiences that you have some, you know, maybe memory to of just what it was like to fly over hospitals and salute the nurses and doctors and you know, those that were on the front lines of fighting the pandemic?
Sure. Yeah, actually, sir, why don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. So, when we started the America Strong effort, it started in Las Vegas, and it was kind of a proof of concept. We were shifting our effort from inspiring and supporting kind of the general public to inspiring and supporting those who were supporting us during this tough time. And we did the flyover of the Las Vegas area for the Vegas Goes Blue effort, and we landed, and we didn't really know, you know, what the response was going to be. And it was just overwhelming. And there was this huge inpour of people on top of hospitals cheering. And just to be able to give that little bit of support to them, we looked at that and, you know, it's kind of emotional. The fact that we could go out, fly six red, white, and blue jets over hospitals and give that little bit of inspiration and hope to those who are fighting for us, you know, on our worst day.
Awesome. And then just to shift to a couple questions related to today's flyover, how do you time the flyover, especially when it's in a pre-race ceremony, time frame, and knowing that you do have to hit it just right? How do you guys time that from your vantage point in the sky?
You know, that's a great question. It takes it's a bit of an art and a science, to tell you the truth. The folks on the ground are monitoring the pre-game show, and they're keeping a track of how it's progressing in terms of the timeline and what we expect. The jets take off about 30 minutes prior to us actually arriving over the stadium for the flyover. And during that time, we're holding to the south or in whatever direction we need to hold. In this particular case, it's down to the south, down by the inlet, in fact, over the water. And we'll hold there, and we're continually getting updates on how the pregame show is evolving and how the time is evolving. And we're making adjustments to a system in our aircraft that's telling us, just about when we need to push forward in order to make the time happen for the national anthem. The B in Brave is what we're trying to hit. That's our target. Now, most people don't know this in the world, but the national anthem has an average of 1 minute and 55 seconds in duration. Depending on singers, that can be plus or minus 20 seconds in either direction. And so we really try to figure out who is the singer, and we develop a relationship with that person. And we try to understand how they sing it, what their intention is in that day, because at 2 minutes out, we've already pushed from our holding and we're en route and we're going about 400 miles an hour and the freight train has left the station. So there's not a whole lot we can do at that point. Normally the singer takes the mic when we're only 12 miles away and heading right towards the stadium. So that's normally when we get our first update on how the singer is doing. And we're looking at every single line that person sings and comparing it to a known time or what we expect is going on. Will be expected to happen with the singing of the national anthem. If there's any deviations or changes, that's relayed immediately to the jet, and that requires us to throttle back, to speed up, to try to make that timing right at the B in Brave. And we take a lot of pride in that, the fact that we're able to do this and do it very effectively, but it is definitely a team effort between us, the ground control, and the entertainer, the singer, and the folks who are organizing the pregame show. They all have to be in communication, and we all have to be in sync with what's going on. Otherwise, you could get a timing mismatch.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that information. And we'll now go to questions. If you have a question, please raise your hand within the Zoom platform. And to start us off, we'll go to Heather Williams.
Hey, guys. Thanks for the time this morning. I'm curious, if either one of you are race fans, or if coming to 500 was your first experience with racing, what that was like for you?
I've been a car enthusiast, automotive enthusiast for a long time. You know, I like taking things apart and putting them back together. So I've always really liked racing, NASCAR specifically. First race I saw was in Charlotte, and it kind of blew my mind, just the sights and sounds of the race. As we've gotten to do this flyover, I've gotten to experience more of the sport, that and also IndyCar. And, there's a lot of parallels between the two communities. And the one that I really like is the team aspect. You see the car out on the track, just like you see the airplane in the sky. And, you know, you can be really wowed by that, but it's really all the crews behind the scenes that make that thing drive or make that thing fly. And, if everyone on the team isn't giving it their all, then that car doesn't drive or that plane doesn't fly. And, you know, that's one aspect of racing that I've really kind of glommed onto and really like, because the parallels are so similar to that in the Air Force, where you've got an entire squadron of people trying to support that one airplane to fly and get the mission done. Just like in NASCAR, you've got an entire team trying to get that car on the track to get the win.
Yeah, and I'll pile on there. I absolutely love it. It's fast, fast machines, gasoline, you know, people working hard, technical skill, teamwork, radio communication. I mean, what is not to love about the sport? It's absolutely amazing. And it's a lot like watching an air show. You got to be down on the track. You got to go to a show to experience it, because yeah. It's the feel. It's the rumble. It's what you know, seeing the sights and seeing the feelings and watching the cars go by and just, you know, the whole body, the whole stands vibrating. It's an amazing experience. And as Strobe said, we've had the chance to interact with the Indy crowd as well. And it's the same thing there as well. You have to experience these races in person to understand the draw, just how incredible it is and just how amazing it is. They're marvels of technology. It's impressive to watch the teams work. And overall, it's excellence and pure motion. And that's what America craves. I think that's why we're drawn to it. And we absolutely love it.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take our next question from Alex Andrea. Go ahead, Alex.
Hey guys, thank you for your time this morning. I'm curious, there's some rain in the forecast today, it looks like, and so I'm curious what the plan is if weather becomes a factor later.
That's a great question. We're always keeping our eye on the weather. There's certain minimums that we have in order to go fly. It's true in the sense that we go very fast when we're airborne, a little bit faster than NASCAR's around track. We're going roughly about 400 to 500 miles per hour, so things happen very quickly. Therefore, we need good visibility to see what's in front of us. We travel a mile every 6 seconds. So we don't have a whole lot of reaction time if there is a hazard that's airborne, whether it be birds or other aircraft, traffic, towers, those kind of things. So there's certain visibility requirements we need, which in general, if it starts raining, those visibility requirements are not going to be met. So we keep a good eye on that. However, the minimums are pretty low. So we can typically, even on days where it looks like we might not be able to fly, normally we have enough and able to get airborne, at least give it a shot. So we're going to be hopeful today. We're going to keep an eye on the sky for sure. But if the NASCAR race is going to go forward, if we're going to be able to run the cars, then there's a good chance that the aircraft will be able to fly as well. Very, very close in terms of our go, no go decisions.
Thank you. And I was curious too, how Briscoe and Chastain handled their test, I guess, with you guys the other day.
Well, so they had a great time. They both came back, we like to say code one, which means you're in fully operational shape as opposed to, you know, higher codes or maybe you got an issue or two. So they both came back code one, perfectly good to go. They pulled 9 G's, so 9 times their force of gravity on their bodies. So, you know, at that speed and that turn rate, you're a 200 pound person, weighs about a ton. So it's pretty impressive. And they both had a blast. They loved it.
Thanks, guys.
Awesome. Any final questions? All right. I believe that's all the questions we have. And thank you so much for joining us and answering, all the questions about the flyover and the timing and things like that. And we wish you the best of luck today before the Daytona 500.
Okay. Thank you, Amanda. Thanks so much. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah, thank you, guys. All right. And to all the media who are here, a friendly reminder, we will post this audio and video on NASCARmedia.com. Thank you.